The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
Holly's Digital Advice, where women and local business owners learn all that is digital and a little bit more. And today we're going to talk with Justin Hanley. He's joining us and he is with Narasopa Media and describes himself as a business architect. So we're going to talk about online marketing along with social media for small business owners. How you doing, Justin?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I want to go back to 2000 because, you know, you started this online business pretty early. And what I want to do is just kind of talk about your business objectives and what you were thinking about way back in 2000.
Well, you know, to be honest, in 2000, I started this as a part-time endeavor when I was working another job. I was doing a ridiculous job creating a database of parts for the manufacture of millimeter wave satellites for the military.
And, oh, my goodness.
And it was actually, you know, so it was just some data entry and a database creation job, and it was relatively easy, but it had a limited scope because there were only so many changes a day, and so I found myself sitting around 4 or 5 hours a day on payroll but with nothing to do because I'd already organized whatever came in for that day, and I just started looking into web design, and I guess it was the early days of web design. I mean, when I look at sites that we put together in 2000, it was a whole different world back then.
And that world was that, you know, no one really thought about keywords. No one really thought about a lot of the things that we have to do now. As long as it looked good, it was pretty much a brochure on a website, right?
Yeah, and not only that, but advertising. I remember there was a thing called free-for-all pages. FSAs were quite popular and actually worked. And they were basically sites that were like an open forum where anybody could post an ad, and it would just roll in chronological order, so whoever posted most recently would be at the top.
And oh, God.
There was not enough stuff on the internet to distract people that those pages would actually get looked at, and people would click on things on them, and it was a big way of getting traffic. And, you know, I think it was probably only 2002 when they became illegal, just as massive spam problems. So it's a lot has changed since then.
So what I would like to do, Justin, if it's okay with you, I want to get microscopic about online marketing and using tools to market your business via the internet, because those are two different things, being an online marketer and using the tools. So can we just kind of talk about the difference between, because I know that all of us have received those emails where, you know, a guru claims that, you know, for $39.95 you can sell an ebook and become rich. But you've actually worked with some internet marketers and you actually made some money and helped them bring a lot to their business. So I just want to talk about that.
Well, I think that the concept of being an internet marketer is actually not that much different than the concept of being a marketer. It's been around forever. I mean, people were doing direct mail, I would say, is the closest analog to the internet before the internet. And, you know, that goes back quite a ways. And before that, I'm sure that there were other ways that people were getting their messages out and reaching the audiences they need to. And ultimately, you know, there are best practices for marketing. You need to understand your audience. You need to have a message that speaks to your audience. You need to have a product that is worth it, so that when people read your message and decide they want your product, they get it and they're not disappointed. You know, if you have those things, everything else is just a tool in that process. Most of the things that are considered online marketing tools are just things that will give you a shortcut. And there are some pieces of software that are great, that take a lot of time out of complex marketing processes. And, you know, to be honest, I went through a period where I read everything that everyone put out on internet marketing, and I signed up for all sorts of courses. I had someone at one point, we were putting about $30,000 a year into education. And almost everything that's published is legitimate in some sense, and I think that the big fail for most people is that you have to work, and you usually have to work pretty hard to make it happen. And so a lot of people buy a piece of software or buy a book that says that, you know, you can be rich and this is the process. And that process might be 100% accurate, but most people will never actually follow it step by step and have the patience to see it through. Because in my experience, to go from nothing to actually a business that's doing any significant income takes at least a year. And so either you have to be funded to get through that year, or you have to be doing it in your spare time, in which case it might take 2 years because you don't actually have the time to put into it. You know, I think that the concept of overnight miracles is just an idea. It's a sales tactic.
So can a regular person just wake up and say, all right, I'm going to pick a product, start selling online, and make money? It seems to me that what you're saying is a lot of the things that we read, you can, but it's going to take a while?
Yeah, you absolutely can. And, you know, I'm just a regular person. I didn't study web design. I didn't study anything. I was a music major. And I got out of school, and I had a boring job that I didn't like, and I fell to the internet because it, you know, because of the fantasy, hey, you can work from home, and you don't have to be tied to a job, and that's how I got into the whole niche. And so I went through plenty of those scams. I mean, I think that if you ask my parents, they'd say that my business now is probably a scam because I tried so many things. I just bought ebooks and I'd try that, and I'd be like, Mom, Dad, this is a genius idea, and they'd be like, okay, and you know, and finally it came down to the point where I did hit on some things that are real and worked, and I think the first real success we had was with an ebook, and anybody can do that. I mean, we picked a topic. Our topic was knitting.
Knitting?
Knit. Yeah.
What made you choose knitting?
I wish I could say it was that I was a knitter, but it was market research. We just looked around. We were looking for topics that had a lot of people interested, but not that much marketing competition. And so everyone in the knitting niche was there because they love to knit. And we walked in. We found a really good knitter. We hired her to write a book. We paid about $3,000. That was a lot of years ago. It might cost a little more these days. Or if you knew how to knit, you could sit down and write a book. It was only 100 pages. It had pictures of hands, but it was very homespun. It wasn't a professional-looking thing. It was, you know, pictures of hands taken by a person with their home camera and written out instructions on how to knit. And the, you know, and then we just got out there and started promoting it. And I think that one thing, the biggest thing that I've seen as a trend is that in almost any business, your email list is the core of the business.
Right.
So with that business, we promoted that knitting book and a knitting newsletter. We had an email list, and we collected emails for about a year before we actually became profitable, before we were making money that we weren't putting back into advertising. But the tipping point wasn't actually that we cracked the advertising. It was that over that year, we'd accumulated a list of about 15,000 people. And once we had that, we could send an email to that list, and every time we did, we'd sell 5 or 8 books. And so suddenly, using advertising to bring new people in, as well as promoting to our own list, we were breaking even and making a little money. And over the next year after that, we went up to making about $15,000 a month relatively passively, just by doing that same thing, building the list, doing the same offers we'd done in the first year. But because we'd added people, we hit that critical mass. And I think that that's really what takes time, is that it's very difficult. Google advertising is expensive. It's one of the best ways to get traffic, but it's gotten so expensive that it's very difficult to even break even unless you're a really good ad writer. So you can advertise in Google, get people to your site. if you can afford to break even or lose a little bit of money every month, you could start selling a product today, and you could be making sales, but you might not be making money. But eventually, if you're collecting those email addresses, and if you're coming up with other promotions to send to them, and you're keeping that list active, that will turn into a profitable endeavor.
So it's just a matter of patience and building an email list that's good. And the rumor that email is dead is not true, right?
Absolutely not. Every business that I work with, the biggest profit center is email.
Okay. But the question is really making sure that those subject topics, headers, will catch your eye, because I know that my open rate is really, really low. I may get 30 emails a page and open two.
You mean you personally?
Me personally, yeah.
You don't open any, yeah. And a lot of people are like that. I think that that has to do with two things. And one is how targeted your list is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for example, I have a promotional list, and we probably get a 20 or 30% open rate for emails we sent. But I also have a clients list, and we get 90 to 100% open rate from my clients list because they've paid us. They're looking for good information from us. You know, they're going to read what we send them. And so part of it is how established are you in that person's eyes as a credible expert or as whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be an expert. It could be that you write little funny things that they like to read and they want to read them every day. But there's that matching up of your target audience to what you're writing. And, you know, a lot of that's about how you collect those emails. And so if you just go out and you do lots of broad campaigns and you get as many emails as you can in, you'll have a big list, but it might not be worth much because it's not exactly what you need. Whereas if you make sure that when you collect an email address, it's because they've responded to something very targeted to you and your niche or your business, you know, those addresses are going to be more valuable over time. And that's, you know, one of the things that a lot of people do when you mention tools. One of the big things was buying lists for a while. You could buy big email lists, but they're generally worthless because they haven't responded to you. And these days, I think that anyone that you're going to communicate needs to have somehow responded to you first. Cold communication, you know, it's spam. And even if it's not spam legally, you can send out a one-off email to a lot of people and it's not considered spam, as long as you're not adding them to a list. But they're just ineffective because those people haven't actually sought you out. And I think that with search engines, with Google, with the way the internet works, with social media, people can come and look for you. And those people that look for you and find you are going to be the gold of the business, as opposed to those people that you just sort of collect so that you can have a bigger, you know, list or fan base or audience.
So is there synergy in the sense that once you read all of this information, you know, of how to make money online, and you do it in a way where you actually follow the advice but don't expect it to happen overnight, then it might work? Is that what you're saying?
I would say it would work, and I think that the biggest key there is probably passion and wanting to do something. And so, you know, we actually, let's take the knitting business. We built that. We sold it to a knitting company, and I think they took it offline within a year. Like, they didn't want to deal with the marketing side. They really were more about knitting, and so the whole project just sort of fizzled out.
It fizzled and popped, huh? Because they didn't have the passion for it?
And we got rid of it because we didn't have the passion for it.
Right.
You know, we weren't knitters, and we were like, okay, we made money, let's sell this and make more money. Like, we, you know, and ultimately it killed what was a pretty passive, good monthly income because nobody was that interested. And I think that one of the big things, so a popular business in a box concept is you get a website, you get an ebook, you get the whole setup. You get the opt-in pages, you know, you just upload it to your site. Boom, you're in business, right? But then you have to figure out how to get traffic there, and you have to figure out how to get people downloading it. And once you do that, really you need to follow up with those people to sell them other things to start making good money. But let's say that that ebook that you bought in A Business in a Box is about, you know, online marketing, and you have no idea about online marketing. You're trying to learn. You don't really care about online marketing. You know, you want to make some money from home, but ultimately maybe you love knitting. You know, you'd be better off trying to do something in a niche you love, because it does take time. I think that people who start businesses around things that they really love are more likely to succeed because they're more likely to put in the nights and weekends and put in the extra time and put in the effort it takes to get that thing to take off because it doesn't feel like work. It feels like working on something you're interested in.
Right.
Whereas if you just throw up a business in a box and you think you want to make money but you have no interest in what the core of what you're selling actually is, eventually you just say, oh, this doesn't work, I'm bored, you know, I'm going to quit. And so I think that picking your industry is a big first one. You know, you have to think that even though it's online, you are starting a business. And if you didn't want to cut hair for your whole life, you wouldn't go out and start a hair salon.
Right.
you know, and so you need to pick a business that you actually want to be in because it's not, unfortunately, actually until you move through the success and have put a lot of work in and gotten there, it's not going to be passive from day one. You know, you're going to have to put a lot of work in to get to the point where you can say, oh, I have a passive online business. And to get there, I think you need to be pretty interested in your topic.
And, you know, those gurus aren't going to tell you that. You're not going to sell your product if you say, well, you know, you need to be passionate about it and you're not going to see any profit for about a year. That's not going to sell a package.
Yeah, there are, you know, there are opportunities. I would say that if you're looking to make money right away, becoming a commission-based salesperson for another company is probably the best way to do that.
What do you mean by that, Justin?
Well, there are companies, if you look on flexjobs.com, there are companies, in fact, we're one of them, that hire commission-based salespeople. So if you want to sell websites, you can come and sign up with us and sell websites. And we have a proven track record. We have a portfolio. We have tested marketing. You know, and there's companies all over the board that have been in business for years and years and are willing to pay you a commission. And, you know, in the online world, it's called an affiliate program.
Mm-hmm.
Although there's a little bit of a difference. Whereas affiliate programs, usually you get absolutely no support. And as a commission-based salesperson, normally a company is really trying to support you in the sales of their products. But, you know, either one of those situations, you're walking into a business that exists and is profitable and does know their numbers. And so if you can find a business like that that you're interested in and you believe that you can go out and sell it, that's a way that tomorrow you could go out and make a little bit of money online because all you have to do is find someone who wants to buy something and not set up the entire infrastructure of a business. So I guess that's the one place where you can make money relatively quickly. However, the caveat is you have to be a salesperson. You have to know how to do sales. You have to be willing to go out and push for sales of whatever product you choose to represent. And a lot of people aren't that. And especially a lot of people looking to get into online business are doing it because they're shy. They want to be at home. They don't want to deal with a lot of people. You know, and so it is a different thing where you have to then be willing to go out into the world and say, look, here's this product. Who wants it? And figure out how to get it out there to the world.
Well, what about affiliate marketing if you choose a hot product like dieting?
The problem is that when you choose a hot product like dieting, you're going up against the best marketers in the world. There are a lot of people making a lot of money off of dieting, and you're going to go head-to-head with them, and you're probably going to lose. I mean, that's the reality of it. I would say that it's much safer starting out in smaller niches and staying away from the mass market. Health in general is a very competitive industry, and also regulated, so you have to be careful in that sense. I'm not really sure about dieting, but I know that any other, you know, the claims that you can make are small, and they get smaller every year, and so you just have to be so careful in the health industry with promoting something. You just have to be careful what you say because you don't want the FDA knocking on your door saying, oh, that was false advertising. But any big niche like that, you know, you're much better off starting small and with a small group of people that's reachable than trying to actually do anything that appeals to everyone. You're not likely to succeed in. Like if you wanted to, say, get into selling sunglasses, I'm sure you could find an affiliate program for sunglasses, but the likelihood that you'd ever be able to get the market share you needed to sell enough sunglasses to make money is small.
So how would you find a nice small niche then?
Well, the easiest way is probably Google AdWords keyword tool.
Mm-hmm.
It has a ridiculous URL that I can never remember, but if you Google AdWords keyword tool, it's a free tool. And you can just sit around and search topics and you'll see how much traffic they get. And there's also a competitive rating, which mm-hmm. is something about how many web pages are online versus how many searches are done on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And, I would say just write down the 10 things that you're interested in and start searching around them and look at keywords and see if you can find something that has a good bit of traffic but is, medium or low competition according to Google. And usually those are good industries. You also, you do need to know a little about the industry. We tried to get into an industry. We tried to do indoor waterfalls at one point. We wrote a book on how to build indoor waterfalls. And it completely tanked because nobody wants to build an indoor waterfall. Everybody that looks it up, it's a lot of traffic. There's not much competition. But everybody that wants an indoor waterfall has enough money to pay a contractor to come in and build it. And they're not looking for a how-to book, So we just didn't know enough about the market. When we dove in, we were like, oh, there's a ton of search. Let's tell people how to build indoor waterfalls. We wrote this crazy book about how to do waterproofing in your walls and what kind of rocks to choose and all of this stuff. And it completely tanked.
Are you talking about an actual indoor water fountain in your house?
Yeah. Like you see in restaurants, where water's running down the wall and into a little pond at the bottom. And, surprisingly, huge amount of traffic, almost no competition. But again, we went on an assumption that people would want to know how to do it, and we were wrong. People were looking for products they could buy and install or have installed for them more likely because it's such a high-end thing that by the time you want an indoor waterfall in your house, you don't want to do any of the work yourself.
No, absolutely not. But that really is, Justin, the key when sometimes, in your head, you say, okay, this is going to work. Here are the steps. And mechanically, it works. But when you actually try to implement it, then you find out the real deal. And that's what I think happens, too, with a lot of these how to get rich on the internet, is that it does work, but there's so many variables that if you are in the equation and you have one variable off, then it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's true. And a big part of that, and this is where patience comes in, because ultimately, even when I've been doing this for 12 years now, I've worked in hundreds of industries, I've seen a lot of successes, I've seen a good number of failures, and I still don't know exactly what an audience is going to want. We start out with a best guess. Our best guess might be better than someone else's because we've been doing it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But we started out with a best guess, and then we test it. And we send out, three different emails to a list and see which one gets the most responses. And we show two or three different web pages to a list to make a sale and see which one makes the most sales. And then we go back and you try to analyze why. Why did that make more sales? And one of my favorite examples of that was when we were in knitting, we did a background color test, and we had black working really well on most of our sites, but most of our sites were business-to-business, web design and SEO kind of sites. And so we tried black, and that brought us up from a blue background. We got more people signing up when it had a black background, and then we tried a bunch of different colors, and actually this kind of really puke green color was the one that won the test.
And why do you think it was the puke green?
Well, we thought about that for a long time. Because our first reaction was like, this is crazy, this is unbelievable. But then I think that what we arrived at was that in the knitting niche, it's mostly, although these days there's actually a whole knit punk, there's a young thing going on where kids are knitting, but mostly it's older women who knit. And our thoughts on it were that the people, and most of those people are not the most internet savvy people on the planet.
Right.
And so we thought that it made it feel more like another knitter who didn't know that much about the internet had built the site. So the more professional and polished it looked, the less sales we made, and the more built at home that website looked, the more sales we made, because it put those people in a comfort zone of like, oh, I understand, you know, she knows how to knit, she doesn't know how to build a website. And that's something, again, that we just, you know, we wouldn't have thought of it. We came upon it by accident because of a test, but then when you learn something like that, you can push it across all of your marketing, make it all more personal, a little less polished, a little less professional, and that actually is, you know, the height of polished marketing, is when people get a message and it feels completely personal to them. It doesn't feel like it's a marketing message. It feels like someone that they want to talk to them is talking to them. That's when marketing becomes genius.
And it's all about trust. You know, whenever I open up an email and I see the glitzy big font and the red and the black letters, I know that, you know, I'm going to get sold. And not only am I going to get sold, but then I'm going to have an upsell with another product. And, you know, it's just a turnoff. And I know that maybe sometimes the content is great, but as soon as I see those big red letters, I just click off.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's also something about constant evolution, because for a while, one certain style of opt-in page will work really well, you know, and, oh, the big red headline works, and giant orange buttons work, and, you know, if you mouse over the button, having like a red border appear around it works, and there's these things that just drive up conversion. And, you know, unfortunately, to be honest, if you got junk mail back in the 80s, and it has stickers and things to peel off and books to open, and, you know, maybe it came with a key, like, flashy has always worked to some degree, and people just go for it, and I don't know why, but it happens, you know. And so some of those tricks are true, but what happens is then all of a sudden that trick gets put out in an ebook about how to boost your conversions online, and then everybody uses that same exact trick on their website so that everybody's got giant orange buttons. And then it becomes a recognizable thing, and it loses its effectiveness. And so part of good marketing is staying ahead of that and making sure that you're constantly a little ahead of the curve, and you're not just... By the time things get into ebooks that train you how to do online marketing, they've been used, they've been tested, they've been proven, and they've been seen by a lot of people. And that decreases their value. And so when the value gets low enough, you know, marketers write books about how they've done these big things. But those marketers, I guarantee you, are onto new tricks and are testing out new things that you're not.
Right.
When you're the one reading that ebook and implementing what they're doing. And, you know, that doesn't mean that implementing those things won't boost your business. It probably will. But to actually get, you know, to the top level of that, you've got to be out there really creatively thinking about what people want and innovating to meet that need.
Now, you are listening to Holly's Digital Advice right here on W4WN with Justin Hanley, and he's been telling us some internet tools and secrets to help us with our internet marketing. But now, Justin, I'd like for you to just tell us a little bit about small business owners and social media in general, because one of the reasons why you're here with me right now this moment is that you have a unique perspective on how you think small business owners should use social media, or if they should use it at all.
Sure. One of the hardest parts of my job, because we're an online marketing agency, so people call us for marketing help, and one of the hardest parts is talking people out of buying anything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously I want their money, and they call me and they say, hey, I know that I need to get into social media and I need social media management. And there's a couple of products like this. There's the new Buzz, and everybody hears about it. Video SEO is another one. Hey, I can get my video on page one of Google. You know, but social media is by far the biggest one. Everybody's like, oh, social media is the next big thing. I know I need to be on it. Can you guys manage my social media? And we do offer social media management, you know, which can further add to the confusion, because they see it on our site and they're like, oh, these guys can manage it. But the reality is that, you know, social media management from us starts at about $800, and I think we're pretty industry standard. And in fact,
now is that a month?
That's a month. I know companies that charge $4,000 a month to do social media management, and the reason that is because social media is a social medium, and so what you're doing is you're hiring someone to sit there and interact with people online, and it takes time. And, you know, so you could also hire a college kid to sit around half-time. You probably would still pay $800 or $1,000 a month to have a half-time person sitting around, you know, just playing with your social media, posting things, responding to comments, making friends. There's no way to automate it. It's a social medium, so whether you pay us to sit around and do it, or whether you sit around and do it, or whether you pay one of your staff to sit around and do it, or you find an intern for free, that might be the best option, to sit around and do it. You know, there's somebody's going to be sitting around spending a lot of time managing social media, and I think that the real question is, and what I look at with business and when we're providing services is, what's the return on investment? You know, what am I going to spend, whether that's time or resources or actual money, versus what's it going to make for the business? And social media is, unless your business strategy is about social media, so let's say that your business is a Facebook game, well, obviously then, social media is your focus.
Right.
But also, if your business is a Facebook game, most likely you're hiring, you're running your own social media because that's your business. Like,
right.
You know, you're not hiring a firm to do your social media. Most people who want to outsource social media are people where it's really not their core focus. Maybe they're service providers, retail stores, whatever, but, you know, they're not in the social media realm, and so they think, oh, I've got to be on there, and they go for that. And I would say, you know, what I tell people is, it's time to hire someone to manage your social media when you're getting talked about and you don't have control over it anymore. And most businesses are not in that position. You know, your average restaurant downtown may or may not get talked about once or twice on Facebook. Somebody's like, oh, I went out to dinner there. It was great. You know, somebody might tweet it or check in on Foursquare. But the amount of traffic around that is so low that it really doesn't matter if you're engaged. I mean, you know, you definitely should have presences on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Those are my big four. I guess Foursquare. A lot of people are into Pinterest these days, and I hate to sound behind the times, but I've looked at Pinterest a lot of times, and I still can't understand.
You can't understand why everybody's all crazy
about it. Why is everyone up there posting pictures? What is this about? I don't get this one.
Now, Justin, one thing that I say, and people have heard me say it before who listen to me, and that is, what confuses me about social media is that, this is where it comes in, and I'm going to try to say this carefully. You know when you take something that just happens and it's organic, and then someone says, oh, this is great, let's get some ROI on this and make it work. Well, I think the whole wonderful thing about social media is that it's natural, it's spontaneous, you know. But once you try to make it something, then I feel like you lose it. So I don't really want to engage with a restaurant if I know that they've got some geek that has nothing to do with the restaurant responding. It's like taking, you know, having a nanny take care of your kids 24 hours. I mean, a nanny is good, but, you know, you're the parent. Nobody knows your kids better than you.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And I think that really with social media, if you don't have any time in your business, social media is not something to engage in, no matter what. Whether you want to do it yourself or you want to hire someone, if you're just slammed and you've got enough business that you are slammed, I would say that worrying about social media, again, let's say then you're a restaurant and you have some code violation and then everyone's talking about it, maybe then you get somebody in to help you manage a situation, like a negative situation on social media. That would be one place where getting help might make sense. But beyond that, one of the easiest things to do, you can connect blogs to social media. So if you post anything, if you have news on your site, or you have a website where you post a blog, or you have any sort of online presence, even if you use Facebook and you write on Facebook every once in a while, you can auto-post from Facebook to Twitter. You can connect them all. There's a tool called Buffer, which is free to some point, and then if you want so many social profiles, it costs something. I'm not sure, but I used a free version of Buffer, and you can go in there and you can write things and say, you know, post 2 things a day. You can sit down and write 10 things at once and just forget about it and let it post for you. So even if you don't have a website, you can use tools like that to slowly populate over time. Mm-hmm. And really, when you are a small business, that's all that you need to do is push out news. So if you're a restaurant, push out specials. If, you know, we're a web design company, so when we finish a website, we post our new portfolio piece to Facebook, Twitter, and all the social networks. When we run a discount, we post that. You know,
right.
Really, that's the only time we ever post to our social media pages. And then if somebody responds, you'll get a notice. You know, mm-hmm. So if somebody's like, wow, this is so cool, you get a little email, it's like, hey, this person, you know, sent you a message on Facebook, you can then go and respond like you would to an email. You know, but the volume is typically so low that it doesn't take all your time. It's no big deal. If you check email once a day, you can do it at the same time and just respond. And ultimately, that's the extent of what most people need on social media. Now, if you've got a budget and you want to go out and you want to make a big splash, you could always, you know, there are ways to run social media campaigns. You can lock content. You can have something on your site, but people can't access it until they like you on Facebook. You know, it's good for bands. A lot of bands do this. They'll say, like our band and get a free track.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are instances where you can run little.
So basically
like
what
that.
You're saying, Justin, is that a small business owner does not need to engage in social media to the extent that all the hype is happening, and that if you have a managed campaign and you have the budget to do it, that's fine. But if you don't stress out on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, even when you have a budget for a managed campaign, it's rare that a social media... I have not seen many instances where social media actually is a big profit center for a business. Mm-hmm. Again, unless that business is seriously focusing on social media. And if you are that business, you know who you are, because you're
right.
Seriously focusing on social media.
Right.
You know, but if you're not and you don't know why you need social media, I would say you probably don't, you know. And if you do, maybe set up a Facebook profile, upload your logo, and when you think about it, once a week or every 2 weeks, post something, and eventually maybe that'll, you know, snowball into a bigger thing and you'll get a lot of fans and, you know, something will happen. But basically, if you just go out there and maintain a profile, post every once in a while, keep it real, that's all that you're going to need to do. And the difference between that and hiring someone to post every single day in terms of income is probably small. Like posting once a week as opposed to posting once a day probably in most cases does not make a big impact on profits unless you are, you know, unless it's a real strategy. And I'm sure there's companies that would argue, I'm sure that, you know, big corporations go out and they run these massive social media campaigns and they see huge returns on it, but it's a bigger game than just being a small business and trying to bring in business that way. And there are ways, again, like, I don't know why I keep talking about restaurants today, but
maybe you're hungry. Maybe you're hungry.
Maybe. But if you were a restaurant and you posted a coupon once a week on Facebook, and you had, you know, and when people came to your restaurant, you said you had a little card or something that said, like us on Facebook, over time, slowly, maybe you get a couple hundred fans, and when you post on Facebook your coupon of the week, people use it, you know, and that can snowball into additional business. So there are simple strategies, but again, most of those, I would say, really, if you can manage it yourself, do it for as long as humanly possible. And if you keep it simple, that's, you know, that's forever, because what have you done? All you've done is once a week you type one sentence and say, hey, 30% off today if you mention you saw this on Facebook. and you hit post. It took, you know, it takes 1 minute. It's not a big time intensive thing. And so
I don't mean to cut you off, but one of the things that I think is important is that right now we're all getting inundated with all of these things that we must do to create a successful business and promote it online and engage in social media. Everyone is bombarded. So I think what's important is, just like the online marketing, I think you have to try things that work for you and find out what's the best chemistry. Because maybe posting every day might work for someone and it might be great. Or someone else, you know, they post once a week and it works. I think it's kind of tweaking the model, because right now everyone is being told, you got to do social media. Well, maybe it won't work for that small business owner.
Absolutely. And that kind of goes back to the concept of running a business that you're passionate about. I mean, the more natural what you're trying to do is to you, the more you feel at home in the business that you're running, the more success you're going to find, because you can have fun with it, you can really be inside of it, you can feel like it's yours. The more that you bang your head against the wall trying techniques that don't feel comfortable to you, the more frustrated you'll get, the more, you know, the harder it will be. And all business success, ultimately, is just about the successful entrepreneurs out there are people who continually take action. And it's just about doing something and continuing to do things and learning from everything you do. And, you know, if you do that, you will find success. And so there's businesses out there that still survive on direct mail, that aren't on the internet at all. And in, not only survive, I mean, there's businesses out there that are huge, huge billion-dollar businesses that mostly do direct mail. And, you know, they're like, well, we need to come into the internet age, and they kind of get that. And, you know, you are missing a big part of your market if you're not, for every media that you don't engage in, you're missing a big part of your market. But I'm an online marketer. I've never done TV advertising. I'm missing a huge part of my market. But that doesn't mean I'm not in business.
Right.
You know, I don't ever do direct mail because I don't want to pay to mail out envelopes. I'm missing a giant piece of my market. And it doesn't mean I'm out of business. So I think that you just have to pick what works for you and what feels comfortable. And ultimately, if you're out there proactively doing things, you're ahead of 90% of people. You know, entrepreneurialism is a small group. Most people have jobs, want to find a job. If you're out there trying to run your own business, you're already ahead of the game. And then when you're doing that, every action you take matters. And whether you decide, I'm going to send a postcard, or I'm going to get on Facebook, or I'm going to run some advertising online, or I'm going to do cold calling, it doesn't really matter. All of those are actions that will eventually, you know, either you'll learn that, hey, cold calling just doesn't work for me at all in my industry.
Right.
Or you'll, you know, you'll be taking action and meeting new prospective clients and kind of building some momentum. And so I'd say getting fixated on the shiny new thing is not really worth it. And the other thing that's often pushed is, you know, get ahead of the curve. If you get on this wave now, it's so young, you can take advantage of it while it's still a new thing, whereas in 5 years, it's going to be oversaturated and that media will be dead. And again, that's kind of true, but like I said, direct mail still works, email still works. Social media, when done the right way, will still work 5 years from now. You know, it's possible that the people who really grasp it right now will make more than people who get on it in 5 years and simply follow a crowd. But at the same time, then that has to be what you want to do. You have to want to spend your time really understanding that medium and becoming the competitive force in that medium. And that's a different thing than wanting to spend your time, you know, doing whatever it is that your business is, and then just using what's available to promote your business. So I think it's the question, do you want to be a social media expert? And if you do, go for it. And, you know, you could probably make a lot of money getting in there. Or do you just, you know, do you just want to run your little shop and have enough traffic to make a living and be happy selling what you sell, you know, and in which case I'd say that getting fixated on any one medium that people promote as the next big thing is, you know, it's probably not worth the time, and often is a distraction, because there's always going to be a next big thing, and so it's always distracting you away from just focusing.
Absolutely. Now, Justin, we have about 5 minutes, so what I'd like to do is just kind of talk about one big thing that you have on your website that I thought was very interesting. In your bio, you mentioned helping build Virtual Family Kingdom that went to 200,000 users in 30 days. How did you do that?
Sneakily.
And you got to tell us that in 4 minutes, because we only have 5 minutes left.
It's a simple.
Simple.
We got some inside info. Virtual Magic Kingdom was run by Disney and was a virtual world, and Disney has a rule that anything that doesn't make, I can't remember, like 10 or 20% profits, they just shut it down. And that goes down to like every popcorn machine in their park. Like, they measure everything. If it doesn't make at least whatever percent it is profit, it gets closed. Virtual Magic Kingdom was a world that Disney built as a promo for the 50th anniversary. And it had no, they never thought about profitability. So after about 4 years, we heard rumor that they were going to shut it down. So we quickly started building a virtual world, which is was a feat. We actually built that in 3 or 4 months. We had the first working version. And the day that they closed, we opened. And they had such a passionate community of kids, and we knew this because kids of the programmers were, you know, played on VMK, and they were crushed that it closed, and we did one forum post on a forum where a lot of kids played this other game and said, hey, you know, we know it's a real tragedy that VMK shut down, but we've opened this other game, and we hit 100,000 signups in a week, I think. And that pretty quickly went up to almost 500,000 within the first couple of months. And it was all from one forum post and just putting that forum post in front of the right people.
And timing.
And timing. Yeah, timing was huge on that one. You know, unfortunately, I wish I could say, hey, here's something you could duplicate. But that was a real, you know, stroke of
genius
luck and timing and like...
Now, did you make money off of that? Did you make money off of it or...
We did. The you know, I actually walked away. I'm not involved anymore. The folks who built it, the programmers, we sort of split ways after about a year working on it. And at that point, I think they were doing pretty well. And it has a monthly fee. It also has microtransactions, like, you know, you can sort of pay a little bit for different virtual objects and things in this world, which... So I think that I'm pretty sure that they're doing well off it, because I know that it was taking a huge amount to run, and just knowing that it's still there online implies to me that it's doing relatively well.
Or they can shut it down like Disney if they don't like it, right? You know, that may not be too bad of a strategy. You know, if something doesn't work, you just shut it down. But, you know, when you're Disney, you can afford to shut down a lot, right?
Well, absolutely. And not only that, but... You know, every time you shut it down, you free up those resources to do something else that, that could be profitable. And I think that, you know, obviously, Disney is a very successful example of how to run a business.
Right. Now, Justin, speaking of how to run a business and being successful, how does someone find your company?
Well, we're online at Narasopa Media. It's narasopamedia.com. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else, but the easiest way to find us is through the website. And, yeah, and right there, you know, if you want to talk to us, you can book a free consultation. We also have some things on the site. There's a free 20-page white paper on social media and management that you can download if you want to learn more about that, and, you know, even just reading it from the management perspective, you can gain insights into what you could do for yourself in that realm. And that's the easiest way to find it.
All right. Thank you so much. You've just been listening to Justin Hanley right here on W4WN, and I will talk with you next week. And thanks so much for listening to Holly's Advice for B2C. Thanks again. Take care, Justin.